And action, and welcome everybody. This is BNP Weekly, episode 250. It is 21st of May. It is the day of Build 2024, which is interesting. In the BNP Weekly, I always talk about the latest Microsoft 365 and related technologies. And we typically have a visitor and articles. This time, however, no articles. I think we've been missing articles now 2 weeks in a row or something like that.
Is it because of the
scheduling and all of that has been complicated.
It's conference season. Everybody's on the road. Everybody's preparing. It's chaos. It's holidays. It's just everything's getting in the way. So
yes.
I think next week, there is nothing in a way. So there will be no more excuses for us not to have the articles. And I think next week we'll have a ton of share, right? Because like it's going to be all the Build announcements, which starts actually today. And I think there's going to be a ton of news around that. So we will definitely be back strong with a lot of articles.
Sure. What was interesting, by the way, as we're recording this, yesterday already they announced the new PCs and PCs of
there was the Windows AI event, correct.
Yeah, so it's actually interesting how they're bundling these on the same week. They're kind of related, but not really. But anyway, so... But looking forward, there's really, really cool stuff. I yesterday had a look on, or participated also on the Teams MVP NDA thing. So obviously knew already what's coming out, but it's just interesting to see how MVPs were reacting on the news and what's coming out. And a lot of cool videos, actually.
Definitely, yes. And I mean, like, so I am a long time Mac user, but the one thing that really captured my attention is recall. So a function in the OS, right, that basically helps you to find things back, things that you've done, that you've seen. That's really intriguing. If there's one thing that I'd like to be able to do more easily is that, like, I know I've seen something somewhere.
You mean search?
Well, it's more than that. It's more than that.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, being able to tie a knot.
No, absolutely.
Like, oh yeah, to remind, like, what was it for? Exactly that. So it's really interesting to see, like, how that will actually play out in practice.
Definitely. It's going to be interesting to see how end users are adapting all of these new capabilities, which will be the interesting challenge always when we introduce something like Recall or something else, which is like, or even the Copilot. Now, anyway, so let's jump on the interview of today because we can continue that discussion over there as well.
Correct. So, we have a guest. Today, our guest is Mr. Paul Keizers, who I think he's still Dutch, but nowadays he lives in Portugal. So with that, welcome, Paul.
There we go. Here we go. Almost. Here.
Almost smooth. It was almost flawless.
Yes. Yes. Still need to practice.
5 out of 10. Wouldn't recommend.
Thanks for the
welcome,
warm
Paul,
welcome
on the show.
Yeah, thanks for the warm welcome. Yeah, all the way out of Portugal, yes. I moved in January 2023 to Portugal from Amsterdam. So that's a big change.
It is. And I can imagine it's a different, I think it's different everything. Like I think Portuguese are different than Dutch. The weather is different. Everything is different. So like what drove you to move, if you can share that?
Yes, of course. There are several things that moved me. Of course, weather is one of them, but it's not really the most important thing because we still work behind the computers. Whenever you go outside, yes, that's true. But mainly, I had the feeling in Amsterdam we were in a rat race and we were just pacing and more. And here the pace is really a bit slow, but that is like when you work, you are still a bit in the rat race, but after work, it feels like vacation time.
Wow.
Yep.
And that's a good way to de-stress.
Yeah, definitely. I think we are heading to an age, I guess it's fair to say, where you start rethinking the values and what happens outside of the work. And you don't need to go clubbing, except Waldeck, who goes clubbing every single day. No, just kidding.
In my head.
No, but it's interesting. The pacing is actually interesting because I remember vividly many, many moons ago a discussion with one of my old colleagues where he moved from Helsinki capital area to a smaller city in the West Coast in Finland for the exact same reasons. And the speed of people walking and just the speed of people just walking on the street is different because the pace is slower and there's no rush. So What drove you to Portugal? Not why didn't you move to, you know, a small village in Netherlands?
Or France, or Italy, or Spain. There's so many, you know, places to choose from.
Or like, Finland.
Well, all the way to the coast. Like, if I'm going, like, you just drove and didn't stop.
Oh, that's the way from coast. Europe. Exactly. As far as you can get.
Well, next to that, I do a lot of surfing, which is great in Portugal.
Yep.
We were here, and the people are so friendly. I know, Waldeck, you may know that from the Netherlands, that we have Netherlands and Belgium, and there's already a major difference. Mm-hmm. And you could say the same for Portugal and Spain. So Portugal is the Belgium of Spain and Portugal. it's much nicer. The people are... not loud. The Spanish tend to be loud, which is perfectly fine, but I like a bit more done. And they are so friendly. It's everybody wants to help, and that's really nice. So that's cool. I think that's also a big part to move here, especially of course the surf, because I like to surf a lot.
Yeah. What about the language? Like, I can imagine. So when I moved from Poland to the Netherlands, it wasn't like I had to learn the language, but there are so many, you know, small things, water cooler conversation, going to the shops, going to the market, where you miss out. How is that in Portugal? Like, do you need to learn Portuguese to really be a part of the community, or like, do you get away with English?
Well, at the moment, I get away with English, but I want to learn Portuguese, because when you move to another country, I think you need to learn the language. It's something that makes you at least do your effort. Mm-hmm. But I'm in the south of Portugal, in the Algarve, and here everybody speaks English. And okay. The major problem is you start a conversation in Portuguese and they start talking back English because they know it's hard for you.
Oh, okay. So
that's really... Yeah. And I think it's similar for you, Waldeck, at the time you came to Holland, that people started talking English or not.
I don't recall it, to be honest. I think really the biggest block was like, for a long time, you don't know enough, right? So you start a sentence, you get an answer back in Dutch, and you're like, oh my God, I have no idea what you just said to me. And then you can switch to English. And then it's something like, but there's no really no other way around it. It's just like, kind of embrace the suck.
Practice. Yeah.
You gotta put yourself through it. And then there are some, you know, stupid things like you will say, like in Dutch, there's like, it's just a difference of one sound between the beach and shit. I was like, yeah, let's go to shit. I'm like, oh, you mean the beach? Yes. I didn't say that? No. So things like that, you just like, well, yeah, these are the mistakes you will do, you know? And there's no other way around it. Just have laugh and enjoy. And eventually, like, you will get better eventually. It just takes time, right? So it's just basically the effort you have to put in, but there's no other way around it.
Exactly.
And I guess in Finnish, that period of time where you suck is going to be way longer.
Yeah, it's going to be it's a bit of a difficult language. So
yes, not all languages are alike, right? So
and I think also with the age, it's getting harder because we have I have a little daughter. She is now 2, so she was 9 months when we went to Portugal. She speaks, or at least words, let's say it that way, Portuguese, English, and Dutch.
Mm.
So that's really like some words she pronounces way better than we do.
Oh, yeah, the accent. Yes. That is also another thing, right? Because like basically the sounds like form in your mouth and the muscles are getting accustomed to the sounds. Yeah, it takes deliberate effort not to sound Dutch in another language. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Now, we jumped immediately on the Portugal discussion and the surfing discussion, because apparently there's some sort of a sea right next to Portugal. I don't know about geography. but can you do, Paul, a quick kind of recap on the intros and what do you actually do for living, and what is your background? How do you, what happened before you moved to Portugal, and what do you do nowadays on a day-to-day basis?
I can do a quick intro. I started with SharePoint in 2001, so one of the old ones
around the block.
And then I went a little bit away, and back in 2007, I fully focused on SharePoint. Went to the Bepos time. And then off to Office 365. So I also had all the SharePoint versions. From 2017, when I became MVP, I started to do more and more teams. And what I see now is that I'm moving a bit back to SharePoint again, because I see there's a lot of requests on there. I run my own company since 2007. It's called KB Works. And that I do together with my girlfriend, Debbie. She helps me on the strategic side of business. That's in a nutshell what I do and where I came from, yes.
Now, how does the work look like? So given the technology what we have and doing work remotely is a norm. So does the movement to Portugal, is it limiting anything, or was it like, well, it wasn't that hard?
I must say it wasn't that hard. I was already since 2018
I'm writing some notes.
I would do that as well.
Yep.
Since 2018, I was already doing a lot of work remotely from our office in Halfweg, Amsterdam, at that moment. But now it's fully remote, and that's a change in way of thinking, because when you are in Amsterdam, you still think, okay, I can go to that client. I will be there in 1 hour. But now it's a little bit different, because if you have to go to a client, it's a 4-hour flight and 2 hours on the airport strolling around. So that's a big difference. But I must say, since 2018, there's never been a moment that you really had to go to the client. Now, I see there are some things changing lately. We had the pandemic, and I think that was a thing that everybody went on the remote thing. But now we see, at least what I hear back from the Netherlands, is that people want to have more people back in the office. So I think there will be a hybrid situation. But for me at the moment, with the remote work, it's still fine. And I don't see a option to go back to the office. I would say when I'm on a job and they request me like once a month, that's fine, because I think it's still valuable to have this face-to-face discussions. And I think, Vesa, for you, you are on the headquarters, so you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yep, definitely. But it's also, it is, like you said, it's definitely possible, but having that human and in-person connection every now and then helps, because then you know the person on that side. Because regardless of we trying to be, let's say, transparent and honest and without roles, we do have a role, because or we do have only one side of our lives which we expose through the video camera. And then having that in-person, you know, reaction and in-person connection helps to realize that, oh, Waldeck is such a brilliant guy actually in the real world. Why does he not?
So that is an interesting point, and I wonder if any of you ever done that. Like a while back, I have this a colleague of mine who is in Canada, and like we've never had a chance to meet in person. We grab beers on Teams, basically to bond, right? To kind of to have this other non-work as I do it, but that was a deliberate effort, because otherwise, like, we wouldn't have met yet, like we wouldn't be able to bond and to kind of build the relationship that way, right? So that was a deliberate effort on our part. It's like, you know, like beyond the working time, at least for me, and with a little bit of adjustment for him, but we basically did that, right? To kind of to have that thing. So I wonder, have you ever tried that to kind of like break the walls, or like no, like the building the relationship doesn't belong on virtual, and you gotta do that in person?
Well, I haven't done it like that, but there's one thing I didn't tell you yet. We bought a camper because now I'm in those nice Portugal houses with the brown furniture. That's typical Portuguese. We bought a camper van, and I'm going to the nicest beaches. I'm going to work from there. Tomorrow I get solar panels on the roof of the camper van so I can work on my Mac, and I have everywhere I have power, but I also have a nice view. So
right,
then you got the whole combination, and I think it's good for some people to watch my background because it's real.
Yeah, you might be able good. To like sit, so. You push your feet up, and you skew like the screen just a little bit so that they can just like a portion of you, so that you are there, and beyond that, like just the noise of the sea and the beach and the endless, you know, expanse of the sea. Yeah.
Exactly. Some things like that. Maybe you know I'm also doing a lot of videos, so maybe I'm going to do them from the beach as well. At least if it's not windy, then it will work. So yep. We have to check that.
Yeah, totally.
But coming a bit back on the in-person versus virtual. So one of the examples, for example, with Waldeck, I think we've been having some of the meetings within our calendar for 6 years already. And with Waldeck, I think at least I'm quickly calculating, I have 6 non-really productive meetings within a week with different people. And that's really to have that relaxed discussion and you know, that association with people without the requirement of executing. So it's more on,
there is no agenda to it, right? You basically and sometimes something come out of it and sometimes not, like there is no immediate,
and sometimes some people can join, sometimes people are busy, and it's completely fine. But it's also, I think, in the, especially in this remote way of working, I think we shouldn't be only having meetings which are just to execute, because again, then it's going to be stressful for sure. It comes to be stressful even as a remote work.
And I think that's really like a difference that I see, right? Because like I was also a part of that where I worked in the office, like even full time. And I think that the main difference that many folks underestimate is that in a past where you would bond, it would be, you know, the serendipitous thing, like you go to a water cooler or you have a lunch. It was just there. While now it's got to be a deliberate thing. And it sounds weird, but you got to have a deliberate meeting to bond, to have that serendipitous thing. It doesn't, it's not going to happen by itself because it's a virtual thing, right? So you need to carve out time deliberately to talk about the non-work and other things that otherwise it would just be there.
Yep.
Right. So that's, I think, is a difference. That's something that isn't intuitive, because how would it be? But that's something that you really need to take into account for the relations to work in virtual.
Absolutely. I know that in the pandemic time, some companies had channels in Teams open that were just open to drop in and talk to everybody who was online at the time to get a bit of those commute things.
Yeah. True. Yeah. True.
But then we already, what pandemic? What was that?
Exactly. No,
it's been 84 years.
Exactly. Exactly.
Hopefully we'll talk about the P word here.
Yes, let's not talk about.
Well, you mentioned, right, that originally you, like your first experience with the let's say SharePoint M365, O365 world was with SharePoint in 2001. Then you left, came back. At some point, you merged into Teams, but now you're going back because there's a lot of interest and demand. Can you talk a little bit more about that? What kind of interest you're seeing?
Well, I still see a lot of PMP requests. So the search, for example, a lot of companies want that, but also on the provisioning side. There's still a request on provisioning with PMP. And I hear a lot of companies that are struggling with it still. For example, I was working for a company that still had that just provisioned their SharePoint site, but they did their home site, for example, in a classic team site and the root site. So
don't do that.
Exactly.
So, if you don't know, you don't know. That's why you need experts to tell you otherwise, right?
True. Exactly. Exactly. So that's what I hear a lot and see a lot. And with Teams, it's more like there's a new feature coming and it's really nice. But I think in the SharePoint space, there's much more technical knowledge needed to get it working correctly. And I think that's something that people tend to forget or not using the full the product to the fullest. And now we see that changing it again. So before it was Teams, and now it's more back to SharePoint. Yes.
I think that, is it fair to say, I'm just speculating completely here, but the Teams obviously is 100% understandable. And then we kind of onboarded most of the customers already on Teams, and people are kind of used to do video recordings and meetings and all of that in Teams. And then we started again thinking on, okay, we've done this, now collaboration happens in Teams. Now we need to start again focusing on content, corporate communication.
Corporate communication.
Now, but it's more on focusing again on the content and also because of the Copilot and AI focus more on, okay, so we have these files anyway in SharePoint, so how are we going to now surface that? Is that a thinking journey?
Yes. Absolutely. And I think the Copilot thing, I know Martina Grom, she mentioned it really correctly. We had the same thing with Delve. When Delve came out, everybody was like, okay, and now we have to turn off Delve. And now with Copilot, it's a different story. They have to have those governance in place because else they are lost. Yeah. I think it's a new driver for SharePoint as well.
Yep, definitely. And we're gonna release something incredibly cool today, or we're gonna talk about it and a few videos in Build, which we're recording this and we're releasing this before the Build keynote, so I can't actually really not yet. Well, I don't know which keynote or which session it will be shared, but it's gonna be really the power of, again, the focus on SharePoint is gonna be super visible in Build, because all of our content is in SharePoint, regardless of is it dropped there using Teams or OneDrive or whatever, it's still in the same bubble and at the storage. So it's going to be interesting to see. So SharePoint is back. It never went away.
I wonder to what extent it's in a way like a pyramid of needs where, you know, like the way we work will change over time, right? Like few years back, we got Teams, and with that, all the there was a demand for asynchronous working remotely. And with that, like that need become more urgent, hence we focus more on adopting Teams and how to make use of all of that. Now that that is in place, we kind of get back to, okay, how can we improve that? Well, majority of that will come back to how we can organize the content that we create in our work and share that with others and bring others along. And that really comes back to the IA, right? So how we organize the information in our work. And that is SharePoint. That is content types. That is, you know, pages and all that. So I think it's really like a pendulum swing in a way, but also how the needs evolve over time and how we at some point, you know, we covered the most urgent thing and then we kind of fall back to the basic things that really drive everything that is on top of it.
Yeah, I agree fully on that. And One thing I think that is really important, and lots of people forget that, that's Viva Connections.
Why is that important?
I think that's the glue between SharePoint and Teams.
But...
Why is that? Why? Why is it the glue?
Well, what I see is that people are starting their work off in Teams, but they miss the communication of their intranet, the direct connection to SharePoint. And what I like about connections is, and then I'm talking in first place about just the visual side, that you have this connections button with your own logo in Teams, but that goes through to the mobile version. So you don't have to step out to another application again to view your intranet. And yeah, a lot of people don't know that. They forget it. And it's such a little step, but it's a major impact for the whole company. And I think that's something people tend to forget. And then next to it are, of course, the adaptive cards in connections, which make it really nice looking and easy to scroll. So I think that's one of the products that a lot of people underestimate.
Yeah. So maybe with that, because that brings me to an idea, or rather a question. How much of these, you know, unsurmountable challenges do you come across where people are like, oh, we have this thing and we cannot solve it? And you're like, that's interesting. Have you thought of X, Y, and Z, which is available out of the box? And people are like, no, we didn't. How many of these do you see? And do you see like typical things that many of the customers with whom you work struggle with?
Yes, the Viva Connections is definitely the number one, but I think also like the what they built is an intranet, but they don't build it on the root side.
Mm-hmm.
So that's also something. If they put it on the root side, make it a home side, it has those advantages, and that's another one that a lot of people or companies forget. And sometimes I know some large banking companies, they even have their intranet, or they redirect their root site to an intranet. That kind of stuff is happening still. And
slash site, slash important, slash intranet.
Slash V2.
Yes. Final.
Final. Now, Paul, coming back on this, we talked about now on the Teams and SharePoint, but and you're seeing this transition. Is it truly that customers are now more looking on the, from your perspective, from areas where you're working on, more looking into investing than on SharePoint and portals and corporate communications, employee experiences, rather than extending Teams? Or is it a combination of things, or how do you see the demand?
I think it's definitely a combination of things. But what I see is that they started with Teams, and that's another one I still see, is that they had a file share and they just copied and pasted it into SharePoint in one document library.
Yeah, still happens a lot. Yes,
a lot. So that's another one I see a lot. And yeah. So they start with Teams, and that's for their meetings, and it's working. But then they need to say, okay, if we build out our chats, we are doing our chats. Oh, but by the way, it should be a channel. That kind of stuff is still happening. Yep. So there's still a learning going on there. It's more on the governance side and on the adoption side. And after that step, they want to go to SharePoint and to make use of the intranet. And yep, the next step is document management, what I see happening a lot. Yeah,
it's the maturity levels of the customers, and then that drives and the usage, of course. And then it is, when I think about features like SharePoint Premium, definitely a suitable, awesome, absolutely brilliant AI-powered features for some of the customers. But you need to have a certain maturity level to be able to understand that now you can do automatic tagging or metadata. Yeah, because
absolutely,
if the files are in document library, that's one way of doing that.
And one other thing that companies are, that's a next level again, is the labeling and DLP, which they forget as well.
Yeah.
And even
what is labeling and DLP? Why would you care? In like elevator pitch.
Elevator pitch. Well, I think especially I use it a lot around the teams, used it a lot, because what you want is that some communication documents you don't want to get out of the company. So you make a label internal and make it impossible to share it outside of the company. That's a little label. But of course, you always have to look what is needed for the company, what is legal requesting. And there's a fine line between legal and what you want your customers, your end users to have go through. Because if you make like 10 labels, which label is what? From a legal perspective.
Super, highly important. Very important.
Yes, primary, the most important.
Exactly.
top secret.
Exactly. I'm actually doing a session or a YouTube series with René Vlieger at the moment about purview and the sensitivity labels, just from basic standards. So most of the people will start and know, okay, I can do this. So that's
to what extent would you say that is kind of like the need for the labels and DLP is kind of inevitable as you grow? Because like when you start with a company of five, everybody kind of knows what is kind of the right thing to do, and everybody knows that. But as you grow, you get more people on board. You know, they only have like you carve out for them a task, a part of the job, and it's no longer that everybody is involved in everything. And while everybody's doing the work following the best intentions, it's inevitable that somebody might, you know, not do the right thing and overshare or do something that wasn't meant to. And with labeling and DLP, you kind of put the rail guards helping people do the right thing. Is that the way to see it?
Absolutely. And you don't be surprised, but most people will be surprised that even big corporates don't have it in place yet.
And I think one of the great examples, I think, well, like you're getting this as well, that because we work on a one few sites and all of the files, and then if the site has a higher confidentiality level than the document, then we get actually messages and conflicting messages, and you need to start rethinking on, hey, wait a minute. So you're putting this file, which is confidential, to a public corporate-wide public site. This is not okay. And then it basically starts guiding us through the journey, which is actually a great way of doing that. It's a bit of a pain in the, you know, it's also like, okay, so that's a great reminder. We need to increase the confidentiality level of the site, or lower the confidentiality level
of
the file, or move it in another location. It's a really great example of that, you know, the logistics and automation behind of the scenes, making sure that we don't actually accidentally share files. Yeah.
And I guess it's also a great example of IT empowering employees, as opposed to being, you know, the guardly like the department of no.
Yeah. Don't do that. Well, yeah. I'll put it in, you know.
No, you cannot save it. Fine. Like,
yes.
But that's also with the inheritance when you use Copilot for a new document based on that confidential.
Yeah.
So it's way more brighter than just one file.
Yeah.
Through the whole company.
Absolutely. Yeah. Copilot is for sure the great reminder for everybody that they need to understand the governance. And even in last week in Wiesbaden in the ECS, we could see half of the expo being basically governance ISVs offers. So, which is understandable.
A minute or two, because I'm conscious about the time. Why is it important? Why is it important for everybody? Why is now the right time, if they haven't done it yet, to kind of revisit the governance plans that they have, the labeling in the era of AI?
Well, I think that's when AI surfaces everything you didn't do. So especially around oversharing. I think that's something that is major impact on the company. So I think with Copilot coming and or having Copilot, the governance is essential to review. It's, by the way, governance is alive, so it's never stopping. You always have to rethink the whole process every step there is, and that's something I'm also busy with at the moment. I'm busy with an update service, and that gives managers and product owners the overview from what is new, because a lot of people don't even know what's new, and especially when it's a big company, there's only one who's watching the message center, and
it's you.
In this case, yes. But yeah, I think that's something that is there are like 50 updates a week. So
yeah. There's definitely, we need to, or companies need to invest or hire somebody to do that, or use consultants to keep them up to date. Now, from a timing perspective, we have 3 minutes before we need to close because of the other commitments, and we need to wait for the recording to upload. Now, what's happening this week? That's a typical question. Build. What we go through in here. Waldeck is basically built. But that's a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So, and that's pretty much it for you, Waldeck.
Right. Oh, so if anything else, I'm interested in what we're going to share, for one, and two, what will be the reactions to it. So, yes. So I'm interested in that, and I will try to follow some of the recordings. Other than that, we have some really cool improvements and some things to talk about for DevPro Proxy 2. So definitely stay tuned about that. I don't know if we'll announce them this week already or the coming weeks. But if anything else, pay attention because there will be a few things here and there across build where you will see DevProxy. So definitely stay tuned because it's really, really cool.
Yep. That's really cool. What about you, Paul? Anything interesting on this week? How does your week look like?
This week is kind of special because I get solar panels on my camper van. But normally a week is like a lot on LinkedIn. I do a lot of postings on LinkedIn. I create videos and I work for customers during the daytime. It's a very interesting week. And this week is all about SharePoint. And after this meeting, I have a meeting with guys from SharePoint and to combine it with, or at least create a sync to Salesforce or the other way around.
Cool.
Nice. Yeah.
Cool. That's really cool. And on my side, I'm catching up on things because I've been on a conference within the last weeks, but a lot of videos actually coming out on new features and capabilities. And of course, build is a really, really cool thing to watch on this. There's really, really cool stuff over there. So, which we'll be sharing in the community calls within upcoming weeks for sure. But I guess that's it. From a timing perspective, we need to start closing up. Thank you, Paul, for joining on the BMP Weekly. Really cool to have you on the show. We'll get you invited back in. I would estimate, what would be roughly to estimate, 450 episodes? But we want to actually invite people back always and talk about how the journey has gone. And I guess there's a lot of people who are jealous about your transitioning from Amsterdam to Portugal. That's pretty cool. So
absolutely. Thanks for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, Paul. See ya.
All right. See ya.